Welcome to The Medical Maze. I'm your host, Dawn Ellen Ray, and today we're going to be talking about FAP syndrome with my special guest, Rosa Rodriguez. But first, let's say hello to my co-host, Phil.
Hi, Dawn Ellen. So this is something that I have never, ever heard of. And, you know, we've been talking with Rosa for a little bit beforehand, so it's an incredible story, and I can't wait to actually get into it.
Yes, and like we were saying, I'm going to let her say the full name of this so that I don't butcher it. So welcome, Rosa, and let's talk about FAP. And first, if you can tell us what FAP, F-A-P means.
FAP means familial intermenosis polyposis, and it's a rare genetic disease that's inherited in my family from my mother.
Well, and I know that because of this, you are stomachless and colonless. So that's really, you know, an interesting sort of situation. So let's first talk about what, what are the symptoms? What does FAP look like?
FAP started very young. I started having FAP syndrome at, I was born with it, but I didn't know until my mother passed away. I was 5 years old and she passed away of colon cancer. And back in the 80s, it wasn't as popular as it is now. They were barely discovering it and they would call it something wrong in your intestines. There was like some type of virus or something and they couldn't figure it out yet. So my great-grandmother ended up having it and it passed on to my grandfather. So my grandfather passed away just like a month after my mother in 1990. Both of them passed away of colon cancer. And that's how it starts. And if you're not educated or if you're not being careful, keeping an eye on it with colonoscopies and upper endoscopies now, you know, it's kind of hard to not to keep an eye on it. You wouldn't know. You wouldn't be able to figure it out. The symptoms are pretty much you're constipated, you're having problems, intestinal problems. You probably have bloated. You're not feeling good. I think the most common symptom that a lot of us would get would be diarrhea, a lot of diarrhea. And you're just like, wait a minute, what's going on? So, I mean, at the age of 7 all the way to 11, I was okay. By the time I was 12, I was in junior high. I was in 7th grade and I was having complications and I was staying quiet because I was scared and I didn't know what was going on. At the same time, my stepmom would give me kind of like this medication to kind of like remove the parasites and all that stuff. And she was kind of very on it. And I would take the medication every morning. So I was blaming that. And I didn't know. So I got to the point that I was very connected with my father. I've always have. And I called him and I'm like, hey, I need you to come pick me up at school or bring me some clothes because I had diarrhea, an accident again. And my whole uniform would get wet and I would be cold and I would be in the nurse station. And I called them and I told them, hey, this is going on for like a week already. And my dad's like, I have to take you in and they need to check you. And at that time, I was already 12.
And this is because of the all those, is it?
Polyps.
The polyps. And I guess it can be, and we're not talking just a few, you're talking hundreds or thousands
of
polyps that develop in your organs.
Intestine.
That can lead to your gastrointestinal tract that can lead to cancer.
Cancer.
Or at least it did in their circumstance, your grandparents.
So, yes, and it was that way that I discovered it. So he took me into the doctor. The doctor checked me and he said, you are having one of the symptoms, diarrhea. And how long have you had it? And then I was like, you know what? I've been having diarrhea for the whole week and I don't know what's wrong. I don't understand what am I doing wrong. I would blame the medication, but obviously I think it's not. And he's like, what's your symptoms? And I'm like, I'm having abdominal pain and I feel like really sick. Kind of like when the ball, they hit you like with a ball when you're playing soccer or with a ball. And someone hits you in the stomach and you're just without air, kind of like that. And it hurts. It hurts really bad. And he said, okay, that's another symptom. Okay, so let me get you scoped. So they scoped me. And when they scoped me with colonoscopy, They discovered that I had more than 200 polyps in the stomach. I mean, they knew all along because they kept an eye on it for so many years. But this kind was getting aggressive and they were changing colors. They were turning white. Some of them were turning red. Some of them were growing. So, I mean, they look like little teeth. And they're like a bunch of like little kind of like pimples all over your insides.
Can you feel that inside?
No. You just feel pain, like kind of like without air, kind of like that pressure that you're just like without air. You're like, oh my God, I can't breathe. Like, oh, like kind of like pain and you kind of like cramp and you just have to go lay down and just kind of cope with it. And it kind of tends to come and go. So it's kind of sharp in a way, but you know, you feel sick, you feel weird. And he said, yes, I need to scope you. So in that time, they did the genetic testing. And because of the age I was, my dad decided to go that route and he tested my brother and me. So this whole time that I've been treated, I wasn't tested yet because sometimes, you know, every state is different. So sometimes they give the children the right to be just a child. And I guess by the time they're 11 or 12 or 13, some states, they already let you do genetic testings. So that's something I learned as an adult, but I kind of understand why. So they did the genetic testing. So the hospital that I was being treated with, it was the same hospital my mom had passed away. So they had all her medical records. So they picked up her genetics. They compared it with my father. They got my brother's genetics. He's 2 years younger than me. And they got my genetics. So my brother must have been probably 10. I don't know if he was, I guess my dad was okay with it because he wanted to find out. Mm-hmm. So they tested us, all four of us, and I end up having 85% of her genetics. So that was high risk. So I had it. I had the illness. And I only had 15% of my dad. And my brother was 85 at the same time. So my dad discovered that both of us had it. So it was kind of hard for him to cope with that, you know, knowing that we had relatives recently that had passed away. Just a few years after. So it was kind of like hard for him to cope with it. I had to go to a genetic counselor. He did, you know, we went through the whole process and they educated my dad. I was really young. So I was 11, 12, I think it was 12. So I was very young and dealing with it was really, really crazy. And him telling me certain stuff, not all of it. And I was being, well, of course, freaked out the first time I had a colonoscopy. I was 7 and they put me to sleep. But I mean, I woke up and I told them, what did they do to me? Why did they put me to sleep? So it was kind of like I was one of those childs that would ask a lot and my dad didn't know where to hide. Mm-hmm. So my dad was just like, how could I tell you? You know, so little by little, my dad started explaining, remember what happened to mommy? I'm just trying to avoid him, trying to prevent it. So my brother would just follow my steps, you know? So I was kind of like the guinea pig going through the whole process and being the one that was experiencing it. But at the same time, you know, I understood that my dad was just trying to protect me and protect us. And he was just trying to do everything he could. And my dad would tell me, I'm just trying to save you. I'm trying to protect you. So you're going to have to go through the surgery. And I just looked at him and I'm like, if it comes positive, I'm going through surgery. He said, yes, you need to get your intestine removed. And I just looked at him and I said, what do you mean? You know? And so, I mean, a lot for me. It was a lot.
So your mom, I think you said passed in her 20s, right? So was she
just 29?
Oh, wow. Okay. 29. So yes. She was she too advanced that she couldn't have the surgery or did she have the surgery?
It was too late for her. When they discovered it, my mom had me when I was 23. So she was young. So by the time my brother came around, it was 2 years after, my mom was 26. So the cancer was developing in her at the same time she was pregnant. And they kind of knew something was up, but they couldn't touch her. So my mom found out that she had intestinal problems around that time that she was pregnant. But the doctor told my parents, we can't do nothing until you have the child. Once you have the child, we'll scope you. And that's when she started getting scoped at 26. But it was because my mom kept quiet all those years and my mom had extra teeth. my grandfather had extra teeth. It was just
that's a symptom, isn't it? This extra teeth of
yes,
or can be a symptom of it.
So from what I've learned from my family, my mom's sisters and family, is that she stood quiet and she was scared. I mean, it's mm-hmm. understandable. And being,
sure.
you know, my family is from Baja California. So they're in Mexico and it's not compared to here. Here we have, it's different. We're in the city. Over there, there are ranches. It's just a desert. The hospitals are really far away. There's not enough equipment. Everything is not. It was the 90s or the 80s weren't that equipped for this illness yet. It was barely coming up at that
time.
Was
the healthcare in Mexico different than here, or did they not have a familiarity with this disease in Mexico?
They just didn't have the equipment to be scoping and doing stuff like that. It was a little town, you know, in the desert. It's mm-hmm. kind of hard for them to have hospital so equipped. So they asked my grandfather's sibling. He has it. He's 81 years old. He's still alive. So he was the one that got first checked. And once he got checked, he told my grandfather, hey, I need you to come and I need you to get checked. Mm-hmm. And they're telling me it's genetic. So he was the one that discovered it, my great uncle. And he was
here
the one
in the States.
He would come back and forth. So, yes, he was getting treated by Rialto. It's somewhere in here in California. Mm-hmm. And it's not that far from where my grandfather lives. So they got he brought my grandfather in, and my grandfather found out that he had the intestinal problems as well as my great uncle. So being that known, my parents had already met at that time. So my dad was like, okay, so your dad has something. And that's where it started kind of picking up and evolving. And my parents met here in California. So it was my grandfather was discovering it. And at the same time, a few years later, my mom discovered that she ended up having it as well. So they never got genetic testing. It was actually done because of the symptoms that they were having. And there were mm-hmm. all three of them were experiencing the same symptoms. So all three of them end up having an ileostomy bag. And I met ileostomies at a very young age. I was
explain? Can you explain to the people that don't know what an ileostomy bag is?
Yeah. Yes. An ileostomy bag is pretty much when you're disconnected from your rectum and you're put a bag on the side and they make a stoma out of it. And that's where you're going to be pooping from and you're going to be using the restroom from. You're still going to be able to pee regular, like a normal person, but you're not going to be able to use your bottom and go to the bathroom like a regular person. So you're going to have to remove your bag, replace it every so often. And there's definitely medical supplies for that. And it's very common in the cancer field to have an ileostomy. And the reason why is because the intestine is not working. It has a problem. It has lesion, or someone could get stabbed, could get an ileostomy as well. Someone that falls from like a tree, anything like that, then you get a lesion in the intestines, you're going to get an ileostomy. So, I mean, it could be even someone wound shot. I mean, there's different reasons, but in this case, we get it because the intestine is not working properly. Mm-hmm. And there's polyps or there's cancer that they need to disconnect you from your rectum and put it on the stomach on the side.
Okay. So your mom passed and then you were having symptoms. You were scoped at 12.
Yes. And then, I started my journey there.
And then when did you end up having then the surgery? And this was, I assume, for the large intestine, your colon first. Yeah.
Yes, I ended up having surgery at 13. We went to different insurances. My dad switched he switched like two times insurances. I remember that time. And they were telling him 14. The other one was telling him 16. So my dad, from when my dad was learning, there's no internet back then, by the way. My dad was learning everything by doctors and he reading and learning and asking questions. And that's how my dad got around. And my dad had the experience because of my mother and my grandfather in the family. So my dad started making decisions drastic. And my dad said, I'm going to take you back to where your mom was and where you where she passed away and got treated, and end up having Kaiser, which is insurance here. And we switched back. And then they asked, they told my GI doctor, told my dad, there's a doctor that is in the children's hospital here in California, and he's very popular. He's like, maybe we could have the kids just have a meetup with the doctor and see what the doctor recommends. And he's a general surgeon, but he's a very, very good doctor, and he's really educated, and he knows the illness that your kids have. So okay, let's take them. So I had a meetup with that doctor, and that doctor, he told me there, I know a Japanese laparoscopic surgery, and we could do that, and I could, you know, do little tiny incisions and remove the large intestine. And yes, definitely I could take your case. And the reason why he took my case was because it was two of us, and he said it's rare to have brothers that carry it, both of them. It's always 50-50 chance that one could have it, but being two, it's very rare, he said. And it's not rare because my grandfather had it, and my grandfather had another sibling. So it's kind of not true. Siblings could have it, and a lot of siblings could have it. And if the gene is in the family, you could carry it and pass it on to your family as well. So it's something that it was a genetic disease. It's called rare genetic disease. And we have it, and it's a problem in genetics. So
now your surgery, was it to get rid of the polyps? I mean, you hadn't developed cancer at that point, correct? It was just,
it was very aggressive. Okay. My brother ended up having like 100 polyps. I ended up having more than 200 polyps. So mine was more aggressive than my brother's. And they told me that it was very aggressive. And that's why I was having all the pain and all the problems more than him. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we don't understand what's going on, but you're more than him. And my dad always thought that my younger brother was going to have it more than me. And he was surprised that ended up being me, not him.
Does it affect, say, females or males more than the other?
No.
No. Okay. So it's because of the fact that you're sharing genes, right? So you get this set of genes, and 50-50 chance you have it regardless of what sex you are. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
I just wonder if that was maybe why they thought your brother might have it be more likely than you.
It's just, you never know. It's just, everything has to do with blood type. Everything has to be genetic. It's just how our bodies, it's just a magic how it works, genetic. You would never understand, would never know. Even scientists don't understand why one gets it and the other one doesn't.
Sure.
You know, and it's a question that my family asks me all the time. My mom had 3 sisters. With her, there were 4, and she had a younger brother, but he passed away of a car accident very young, so we would never know about him if he had it or not. But my 3 aunts are still living, have no symptoms, have no nothing. None of my cousins from my mom in that position, that her sisters, they didn't have it, but I have my mom's cousins that have kids that have it. Mean, it was my grandfather's siblings. Some have it, some don't. So, I mean, you would never know if your child's going to have it or not.
Okay. It's probably without genetic testing, I would assume, for some marker or something, or the gene or something. Yeah.
So I did get the colon removed at 13. I was hospitalized for 2 weeks after.
Wow.
What a lifestyle change for a 13-year-old. Yeah.
Did you understand? Sorry. No,
that's okay.
Did you understand what was actually happening when they told you, hey, we're going to remove your colon? At 13, you just became a teenager. So how did that make you feel mentally?
First, you have to get the test first. So I got the test first, and my dad had to get like a tape recorder at that time because we were getting so many calls, and my dad would work and we would go to school. We would have a regular life. So it was kind of hard. So my dad said, I'm putting this in case the doctor calls because we're going to get a call. So my dad was always like very, very connected with doctors at a very young age. So I got the call, and I was arriving from middle school, and I was going up the stairs because we had a 2-story house. And I heard the message, and I already knew because they had told us if we were to get a call, that meant that it was bad and it was positive. So he's playing the messages, and I hear the message, and all you would hear was no, 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 no. That's all they said. And I was angry. I was so mad. And I told my dad, I'm not having it. I'm not going through that. I'm not going to go through that surgery. You're crazy. I'm only too young. It's like you're out of your mind. How do we know that it's going to work? And I'm going to go through it, not you. So it was kind of like giving my dad attitude. And yes, it did happen. And I was 12 and giving my dad attitude. And we found out at 12 that I was going to need the surgery. And I was in track. So for some reason, they were trying to switch stuff up in school. And I ended up having track. So my doctor asked me, hey, so when are you going to get out of school? And then I'm like, you're lucky. I was so mad. I was like, you're lucky. He's like, why? And then I'm like, I'm in tracks and I'm going to be off for 4 months. And so everything was planned, but my feedback, my reaction was no, was very angry. I was very irritated. I was angry. And my dad told me, hey, take a week, think about it. When you come back and talk to me, I know you're mad and I understand. I want to hear your feedback in a week and let me know how you feel and, you know, think about it. So it passed a week and I went back to my dad and I told him, okay, let's talk about surgery. I'll go through it, but I'm scared and kind of like cope with things. You know, it's not easy for me either going through it. You as a parent, I understand it's hard for you, but I'm going through it and I need like all the support from you and kind of being very understandable and having conversations like that with your child at 13. At 12, it's really like out of this world, but we end up having like all that bond and me and him talking. He's like, I'm just trying to do my dad's, you know, dad's job and is protecting you and preventing it. And I said, I understand, but it's really hard. So I talked to the doctor. We talked to the doctor and we said, okay, we're having surgery in May. I'll be out. And he said, all right. So, okay, cool. I didn't even get to go to my graduation of middle school. And I was really, really disappointed because I wanted to be there and I wanted to be with my friends. But seeing that I had a very short limit time and I needed to recover for back to school. So I was going to be off for 4 months from vacations and everything was planned. And we went in there, did the surgery, got the colon removed and, you know, waking up to that. I remember my godparents were there that night, and my parents were there, and I woke up finally. They're like, oh, Sleeping Beauty finally woke up. And I said, oh my God, you guys are here. And I'm like, you guys are so sweet. And it was late. It was 9 or 10 late. And they were there with the kind of like lights very low. And I woke up and I saw the room and everything. And I had like the tube in my nose. I had IV. I had everything on me. And I woke up
to a very different reality, didn't you?
Yes, it was. It was painful, painful, yeah. pain. I felt like a train just passed through me. And it was crazy waking up to so much pain. And right away, I remember the doctor, one of the doctors that, because it was a big team. It wasn't only my doctor, another doctor. It was several doctors present, and the surgery was a 9-hour surgery, and it was a lot. And yes, I woke up and I started looking at like everywhere the room, and I just said, it happened already. And then they're like, yeah. And, you know, I took it well. And the doctor explained to me, I couldn't speak. He's like, there's a possibility you don't have a voice. You can't talk. And I just looked. I tried talking, and I couldn't talk. And
was that from the tube down your throat?
I think it was everything, since okay. Everything was glued. Everything was so I didn't have a voice. And okay. The doctor said it was very normal to not be able to talk because of the surgery. So my voice was kind of like raspy. I didn't have a voice. It's kind of funny. Kind of when you get sick and you can't talk, kind of like that. And I just said, he's like, you want to say something or you want to write something? And then I just said, I just went like this, just pain, 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 you know?
I'm sure. Yeah.
They were like, don't worry, we're going to give you medication. I started having morphine at a very young age.
Mm.
So it was kind of
But crazy. Did you just take it for the recovery period on that surgery? And did you recover, you know, pretty quickly as a younger child?
No.
It was a recovery. Okay. What was that like?
I'm that kind of, my body tends to heal a little slow.
Okay.
And I was there for 2 weeks. I would get tired of dad always being there. And at the same time, my dad's sister was going through a car accident, and she had just done, she was in coma at the time I went into surgery knowing that my aunt was really sick. She had just had a car accident, and it was a lot for the family, but I had a planned surgery. So I was able to go visit my aunt. Being in coma, they snuck me in there. I wasn't allowed to, but I was the top priority at that moment because I wanted to see her. Mm-hmm. And I was really close to my aunt, my dad's sister. So I definitely wanted to be there, and she was going to be there for me. And it was very disappointing. So I went in there with all these things in my head. And when recovery came, the doctor asked me, is there any depression, or do you feel depressed? Do you feel anything going on? Or is there anything that could trigger you to recover faster? And I looked at my dad. My dad looked at me, and my dad's like, you could tell him. And I had to bring that up. And I said, yes, I want to get the hell out of here. I have an aunt that's sick, and she could pass away any moment. She's in coma. And yes, that is true. It could definitely provoke something like that right now because of the stage that I'm in, and I'm in surgery. I want to leave. I don't want to be here. You know, my brothers are in school, and I'm worried, and my dad remarried. So I call her mom, and, you know, my dad's did remarkable of his work with me. I wouldn't have my parents there at night with me. Like normally parents stay there and they're with their child. I end up alone, but the situation was very complicated, and I was very understanding. And I told my parents, just go rest. And then whenever you guys could come in the afternoon after you drop off my brothers at school. And so my dad had to take some time off while I was in the hospital. And I would tell my dad, go back to work, have a normal life. I'm okay. I could handle it. I can be alone. I speak English and Spanish. Don't worry. I'm fine. So I was pretty much in that kind of spot that I was alone. And my mom and my dad would only go after they would pick up my siblings from school. And having a teenager and a 10-year-old, it's kind of hard, and a 12-year-old in the hospital. Yeah. So it's kind of like my parents would worry and would go take the kids to school and take some time, go visit my aunt, and then from there jump to the other hospital to me. So it was a very, very hard situation that we were dealing as family.
Yeah, it sounds like it was difficult, but it sounds like you also had a good support system with your family. That's really nice.
I did, and we did good. Of course, I had to go through a lot of medical stuff, and we did good. I didn't have no feeding tubes. I didn't have – the surgery was an excellent surgery. It's just healing that I took maybe a year to heal, and I had to go back to school very young.
So you healed from that. You took the year. So how long before you started having other symptoms? Because you ended up without a stomach as well. So how long
before? I thought, it was funny, I thought that I wasn't going to have to go through it again. I thought that, hey, it's just a colon. You're getting removed. You know, I end up trying to be a normal woman, having a baby, and I couldn't have the child. I went through an ileostomy at that time at 23. I went through a blockage with my pregnancy. It didn't go right. And I just tried living a regular life. I mean, all those years from 13 all the way to 22, I was fine. Okay. But at the age of 22, a little bit before I got pregnant, I was diagnosed with stomach cancer at the age of 22.
Oh my. And then you're pregnant. So, wow.
Yes, I it wasn't planned. So I'm being a Mexican, being my roots, my dad's, I had to decide, and I decided to keep it because that's what I was taught to do. But I had in the back of my head, stomach cancer. And the same situation with my mother was happening to me. I was being pregnant while cancer was developing in me.
And they couldn't treat you, of course, until after you gave birth, like your mom.
Yes. Yeah. And I had a stillborn, and I had him at 6 months, but you know, the pressure, the pain, the pressure, everything was stressing me out. And I lost a baby at 6 months, and they did an ileostomy procedure 24 hours before I lost the baby, and 24 hours later, I lost the baby. And it was all resolved because of the first surgery. You know, all the organs are moved up towards the top. So when you're having a baby, normally all our organs start moving up and start, you know, making room for the baby to grow. In my case, the organs were just here. And, you know, the baby was making room. So he made a hole on my small intestine and caused an infection. And it went to my bloodstream. So I had an infection. I had lung problems, breathing problems. My oxygen was low. I was severely anemic because I couldn't keep down no food. And I was throwing up and having a lot of diarrhea. So I had a blockage, and I was hospitalized for 5 weeks around that time. I told them to check my records because I went into the same hospital that I had my surgery for, the first surgery.
Back when you were 12 or 13, I mean?
Yes, and I told them, I'm like, I have this history, check it. They never checked. And what? They never checked. Mm. They were morons, like literally. Whoa. And they made that mistake, and I advised them to check my charts because of the history I had, because of the organs and everything moved. And they told my dad and me, if she gets pregnant, we don't know what may happen. And when I told my father I was pregnant, my dad said, oh boy, Houston, we have a problem here because you don't know the severity of the problem. And I told him, I know, but I'm keeping my child and I want to be a mom. And I know I could. And it was just that assuredness that I knew everything would come, even though I knew that in the back of my head, it wasn't true and all the problems that I was having. So it kind of all built up for me and it's kind of stressed me out. And I try not to get stressed out, but it's impossible. And I lost the baby. I went through the ileostomy and I was hospitalized for 5 weeks there. Mm. And I was very, very malnourished, very sick. Mm-hmm. I was not making it. There was a chance that I would pass away. They were preparing my parents for the worst. And everybody came to see me. Like, I had family coming from 4 hours away just to visit me. And I was like, what's going on? My parents never told me. They kept everything. So my cousin she was very close to me. She would go visit me and she would walk out. She's like, hey, I'm going to step out for a minute. Is that okay with you? And I would be like, yeah, it's okay. And she would go cry in the hall. And it was hard for them to see me with four machines, two poles, and getting a TPN, going through all these medical stuff. And
only imagine. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And I didn't know how severe the problem was because my parents kept it from me, because they thought that if I were to know that I was dying or there was a chance that I would probably get depressed. And I was getting really sick. So the doctor, the surgeon, tried to do as much as he can, but he couldn't. So he had to bring in a primary doctor to kind of help me. And the primary doctor, actually, I was the worst patient on the floor. And the primary doctor told me, I'm going to fix you. We're going to send you home. We're going to nourish you. We're going to fix you. We're going to make you walk. Because I couldn't walk for that whole month. I wasn't able to walk because I was so weak that I could fall. So I wasn't allowed. So my doctor told me, you're going to have to learn how to walk again. It's like you've been off from moving. So we need to regain all that strength again. So I had like 14 things I had to do before I was released. And I had to go through a lot to get out of there. But I was able to get out. I cremated my son as soon as I got out of the hospital. I was there for 5 weeks, and I was one of the first cases that a mom and being in the hospital for 5 weeks. And I was just like, man, this sucks. But we went through it.
I'm sure it did.
We went through it. I had the ileostomy for 3 years and a half. And I was going to, it was 2010. And I was going in for ileostomy removal reversal so they could reverse me back to how I was. And they told me, hey, we need to do endoscopy. You haven't had an endoscopy in a year and so. And I said, yes, I haven't, because I was pregnant and going to medical stuff. Let's do one because I'm having pain. And I woke up one day, I was 26 years old, and I just had so much pain, and it was sharp pain, and I just couldn't even get out of bed. And I just said, whoa, this is weird. What's going on here? And in the back of my head, I knew the polyps were there growing. Mm. And I had not gotten scoped, so I got scoped with the colonoscopy. They checked me. The doctor told me, is there anything you want to tell me before I put you to sleep? And I said, yeah, I have polyps growing in the stomach, and it's kind of, I don't know how far the situation is, but it's been 4 years, and I don't know how bad it is. And he's like, because of the situation, you weren't checked. And I said, yes. And I have an ileostomy, so let's see what we could do. And they put me to sleep, and they checked. When I woke up, the doctor normally tells you kind of like a feedback of everything that went on, what he saw. This was one of those cases that I didn't see the doctor. And I told my mom, this is weird. I never get this type of treatment, and I don't like that. But since I was being sedated, I was like, you know what, just help me put my clothes on. I just want to go home, and we'll figure it out. I'll talk to the doctor. It's okay. But it's weird that the nurse comes and talks to me. It's normally the doctor. Oh, and she just
that
said.
Is, that is odd, isn't it? Yeah. It's usually yes. The doctor would talk to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she looked at me, and she's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm drugged. I'm sedated, but I'm not dumb. And I told her, I don't like that. No, I don't like that a bit. And she said, okay, we'll figure it out. It's okay. Let's go home. And she helped me. I went home, and right away I got another call that I had to go in and talk to the doctors. Mm-hmm. And I knew that something was up. And my fear, I'm so resilient that I was standing the pain. The pain was like, so strong. I couldn't get up. I couldn't walk. Sometimes not even to the restroom. That's how bad it was. And just rolling out of bed, I would have to kind of like roll. Like if I had just had surgery, I had to kind of like roll out of bed in a certain way to just be able to get out of bed. And I was like, I'm trained to get out of bed like this, but why if I didn't have surgery? So why do I have pain? And this is not normal. And mm-hmm. the same pain that I had when I was 12, I was enduring the same pain, and I was like, wait. And I still didn't think it was stomach cancer. I just knew the polyps were growing, but you know, polyps is one thing, cancer is another. It's two different things. And I just said, okay, we'll figure it out. And finally this appointment came with the doctors, and I was there for like 40 minutes to an hour. Nobody would come. So I was like, okay, what's going on? This is weird. Like, why am I getting this type of treatment? And they're just so weird. And then I said, all right. So a doctor, a woman, stormed in my room. And she told me, you know what? I have to tell you something. I'm tired of these doctors not telling you anything. And then I just said, what do you mean? What's going on? Like, who are you, by the way? You know, I don't know who you are. And I had sunglasses on inside the... it was just one of those days that I knew it wasn't going to be good, but I was in pain. So yeah. I wear shades on that day. And she storms in. She's like, hey, I have to tell you that you have stomach cancer. And then I just looked at her and I just said, excuse me? And then I'm like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And I'm like, you can't just storm in here and tell a patient that they have stomach cancer. You know, that's not the process. That's not how you say things. So I looked at her and then I said, you must be mistaking me for some other patient. You know how many people have my first and my middle name and my last name. So common. Like, I have such a typical common name. Maybe you should check. She's like, no, what's your birthday? And I told her. And she's like, yeah, that's you. You're the patient. And then I looked at her and then I just said, it can't be. I was in denial and I knew that it was true, but I was I guess it's just survival mode that sure. I just said, no, it's not me. What's wrong with you? So I was very mad.
Let me ask this though. So you end up with stomach cancer eventually, but that doesn't happen in all the cases, right? It's not just because you have the polyps doesn't necessarily mean that it goes to stomach cancer all the time. Is that true?
Yes, but this case, the same thing was happening. Yeah. Same thing, really similar to the colon. And I knew when they discovered it, they told me they found a bed full of them. It's like just like a little river. And I was 22. And I knew in the back of my head, I knew what she was saying. But my fear of survival, my fear of everything, that I just protected myself that way of trauma. And I just said, it's not me. You're crazy. And she told me, no, it's you, honey. And I went home. Of course, I started crying in that moment. And I said, why? I am so young. I'm only 26. It can be happening again. Like, you know, and then this is something that it happened to my mom. She was 26 and my brother was, when she was pregnant, my brother. So the story was repeating itself again. And I knew the story so well. And I was just like, my goodness. Okay, here we go again. So what am I going to do now? Like, there's nothing you could do. You just have to go home. And these doctors don't want to tell you. I got tired of it. And I'm the one that's telling you. Because it's your right as a human to know what's going on. And they don't want to tell you because they want to do further testing. But you have it. And you know it. And then I just said, man, she's good. And then I just looked at her and I'm like, this is not how you guys are supposed to do things. You're supposed to send me to the genetic doctor. And the doctor's supposed to tell me this, not you. And I'm like, this is not how stuff's supposed to be done. They have to prepare you. I'm like, what if I go out of here and I commit suicide? Because you guys are just not doing things right. I understand where you're coming from, that you're fed up and that doctors are not telling me the truth, which I thank you for, but there's a protocol and there's a process, and this is not the way that things are supposed to be done. And I know this because this is the second time. Oh, and I just said, all right, we'll go through this. I was crying and I was depressed. I was out of it, shocked.
Sure.
I was in denial. I was okay, everything. And I'm just human. It's okay. I went home. I cried my whole way home. And when I'm my friend was with me. So my friend found out, really close friend of mine. And he told me, so what could I do? And then I just said, there's nothing you could tell me. There's nothing you could do. It's just, I have to cope with it. I have to figure it out. I have to find a way how I could get out of this mess now. And it's just, it's too soon. Give me some time. Let me kind of
process
everything. I don't even know what am I going to do. So when I got home, right away, a talk that I had with my dad came up in my head. And I said, I'm not going to tell dad. Dad's not going to find out. I told my dad when I was probably like 18, 19, somewhere around there. Hey, dad, if I ever get cancer, you'll never know. And my dad's like, you're crazy. You're my child. Like, read you. I know everything since birth. And then I told my dad, you don't know your daughter. You don't know you know, your daughter's crazy. She's just out of this world. She's not going to tell you. And he's like, why? Why would you want to tell me? And I'm like, if I'm dying, I'm not going to tell you. And if there's a risk of cancer in my body, why would I endure that pain to you? It's just not me. It's not how I want things. I'd rather you guys remember me in a certain way, my regular normal self, and I wouldn't want you guys to know, so I'll keep it to myself.
So and were you preparing yourself to pass?
Yes.
Oh gosh. Yeah, so you thought you were protecting your dad, and at the same time though, you were kind of cheating yourself out of the support from your family that you had gotten the first time.
I made the decision to tell my stepmom, my mom.
Okay.
She's a woman. She's strong enough. She's been with me since I was 7. And I knew that I was going to throw a lot on her. But I had talked with her. She came to my room. She's like, hey, how's it going? And then I just said, oh, my God, this is a big one. And I just told her I have stomach cancer and I don't want nobody to know. Mm-hmm. And I'm just telling you, my friend knows because he was with me and I need that. So you and him are the only ones that know. And I don't want the world to know. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's going to be between me and you. I can't tell my dad. I can't tell my brother. I can't tell my brothers. Just kind of cope with it. And I need you to be very strong. And I need someone that is going to be able to back me up. And at the same time, medical-wise, I got to talk. And they're telling me that I need this removal, the stomach removal. I need to go through it. I don't know how far am I, but it's not good. And they're scared. And the doctor doesn't even want to do surgery on me, from what I know. And he's saying no to me, and he's saying that they're going to toss it to him and because of the experience he has. And I was actually being his first case of stomach cancer. And he was a very young doctor. If I was 26, he was like around a little bit mid-30s.
Oh, wow.
He was very young, but he was a very smart doctor. And when we had that conversation, I told the doctor, I understand that you don't want to do the surgery. So what's going to be done? Because I need surgery, right? He said, yes. And it's not only parts of it partial like you want. He's like, it's all of it. And then I just went in there and I said, okay, if there's people with bypass and they get reduced stomachs and they live, what's the big chance of going through stomach removal and not living? It's a possibility. I have to be optimistic. I'm an optimistic person. I'm very positive. Let's do the surgery. We'll figure it out. And he's like, I don't want to do the surgery. And then I just said, oh, my God. Okay, so I'm having a difficult one here. And I was just like, dude, I need you to, like, bear with me here. And I need you to work with me. I'll work with you. I'll do everything I need to do. He's like, Rosa, it's September. I'm booked. I'm so booked. I have to figure everything out for you. And I guess he was getting kind of frustrated in a way. And he said, I'll do the surgery. Obviously, they're going to toss it at me. But I need to schedule you in my schedule because there's no room for you. And I'm going to save you. I'm going to do everything that's possible in my power to be able to save you. And I have time to do it. I know I could do it. But when would you like the surgery? And then I said, not right now. It's going to be holiday season and Halloween. I'm a big Halloween girl. I'm a big, you know, I'm a November baby.
Could they wait that long?
No.
Were you that advanced or not as advanced that they could wait that long?
I couldn't wait. And he gave me the feedback and he said, look, honey, if I tell you, you hop. And then I looked at him and then I said, I'll hop like a frog for you and we'll do it. And then he said, I'm not going to get myself a little stubborn here because I can't. And he's like, no, you can't. I need ASAP. And I said, when can we schedule? Then he's like, I don't know. I'm going to try to see. I'm trying to aim at October. And then I know you don't want October. I know. You want January, but I don't have time. You don't have time. And I just looked at him and I'm like, you said, I don't have time. And he said, no, we're really, really. He's like, I need to have the surgery to prevent from the liver. See, this is how it works. He said, if the blood goes through the liver, all the organs are going to get, because the liver is the filter. Mm-hmm. So all your bloodstream, all your blood is going to get cancer. And guess what? What runs through the organs? And then I'm like, blood. He's like, so your organs, all your organs are going to get cancer and because of the stomach. And then I'm trying to prevent that, honey. So I need you to kind of cope with me here. And I just looked at him and I said, oh my God, I'm dying. And he said, yes, but we still have time. You got here right on time. I need to do the surgery. And I just looked at him and I said, man, this is too much to take for a human. he's like, you need anxiety pills? And then I said, you betcha I sure did. You better get me Ativan because I need Ativan now. I'm like out of it. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, my hairs are like all like,
yeah, like just this. And hitch in the face. That kind of news.
Yes. It was
reality
really
of it all.
Oh, it was, it really, really was bad. And I was young, but that was the good thing that I was young. If I would have been a little bit more, I would have not made it. But I went in there right on time, and it was because of the pain that I was enduring that was pushing me to go in. And, you know, the previous years I had it really rough, and I was going in there for ileostomy removal. And I told him, hey, so what's up with the ileostomy? He's like, I got a bigger problem I have to fix. The ileostomy is going to be on standby until further notice, and that it's not going to happen right now. So you can remove the stomach and the ileostomy. He said, girl, you're crazy. He said, no.
So you got the stomach removed, and you have, and how long ago was that?
13 years ago.
Wow.
Almost.
So 13 years you have done well then. You certainly have learned how to cope with it since. And what does that look like for you? I assume you're on special diet?
Yes. I mean, it's kind of crazy because of the colon. I became lactate intolerant. So that became really early on at 13. I'm sensitive to colors. I'm very sensitive to colors. I can't stand dyes, any food coloring, any dye, even if it's if it's beets and it's red. Even natural stuff, any coloring, it's not, I do really bad with it. I get very, like a lot of diarrhea. So I'm very sensitive to colors since I was 13. So the doctor says that is very common for someone that doesn't have a colon to be very sensitive to colors. That's very common, he said to me. And I went in there asking the doctor one day, hey, I'm trying to eat Cheetos and I'm not allowed to eat Cheetos, hot Cheetos. He's like, first of all, you shouldn't be eating hot Cheetos. And then said, well, I love hot Cheetos, so I'm sorry. I get cravings sometimes, and I'm just a kid. He said, the food coloring, you're sensitive to the colors, and that's why you're getting that. And diarrhea is very typical. And I just looked at him, and I said, man, that could be any color. He said, yes, any color. And when I get sick and I have to take NyQuil, NyQuil is really green.
Okay.
It's bad. It's really bad. So I try to avoid any dyes in that case. And with the stomach removal, I became gluten free.
Wow. Okay. Well, gosh. So this, your story is fascinating. And I, we could go on and on. I just so appreciate you taking the time today. Yes. Is there any place that if anyone wants any more information that they can refer to find out a little bit more about FAP syndrome and what all the details?
There's the internet, Google, there's medical.
Like Johns Hopkins, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo, some of the typical
everything.
Ones.
Everything. Okay. I go in there, I do my research. I think the experience of the family that I have, that it runs in the family. I have a lot of cousins, I have a lot of uncles, a lot of aunts. Some have passed away. In the journey, I've lost a lot of family to cancer, colon cancer, or any cancer. I'm the first one that has stomach cancer in the family. Out of all of them, I'm the fourth generation. And so far, there hasn't been that another one like me, but I hope not. I pray to God, no. But it's just the percentage of the stomach removals or people with coming up with stomach cancer is really rare. It's only 3-5% of the population that gets it. So it's not as common. It has improved. It has been going up high since 2008 that I got it. So yes, I do know that the risks are coming. I don't know why it's happening. I think it has to do a lot with the way we're eating, our environment, everything affects us.
And maybe awareness too about, the genetic testing and the awareness about the disease.
But. Yes. So there's a lot of women that come up with stomach cancer. I have been paying attention for years. And sadly, it is women that are mostly affected. I'm not saying that men aren't, but the high risk. I know a lot of women don't have a stomach and they're women. A lot of the people, they're women. Wow. And there is a lot of support from the Sisters with No Stomach. There's the Debbie Foundation as well for stomach cancer. So there's a lot of foundations out there for stomach cancer patients. And thank God for that, because that educates more women. And I'm part of one as well. It's called Fight CRC, which is colorectal cancer. And I advocate for them. I started advocating a few months ago for them. And they teach you all kinds of cancers. So that's, and I get to pass on to others.
Well, thank you so much for giving. This has just been a very interesting topic and discussion. So we do appreciate your time. Thank you so very much. And Phil, you have any parting words?
I'm just amazed. This is an incredible story, Rosa. I really appreciate you joining us today. But guys, if you do visit our website at medicalmazepodcast.com, everything is there, from blogs to every episode, obviously the episodes. If you do want to register as a guest, you can register as a guest on our website. So guys, until next time, we will catch you later. Bye, Rosa.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.